You would think I would be okay with the lights by this time, but I really feel like I need sunglasses. They're really bright. I want to begin with a little bit from the Radiance Sutta. Oceans embrace a continent. Space welcomes the sun. Embrace yourself this generously. Form your arms into a circle and cherish the arising of serenity. Attend the birth of something new. Thoughts dissolve into peace as you become the one who embraces all. I want to begin tonight just by appreciating you, appreciating that the first day of a retreat can definitely have its challenges, and especially those of you who are completely new to this, it can really feel like it's been a lot, and one can start plotting, you know, how to get out of here. And engaging in a lot of doubt about having come at all. And even for well-practiced yoginis in the room, and there are many of you with many years of practice, many of you with decades of practice, it's still the first day. There tends to be a kind of adjustment that needs to happen. Kind of coming, you know, skidding to a stop, and then all the reverberations that can happen when you stop. And it's different, we know now, for those of you who are new, we know it's different than a daily sitting practice. Your daily sitting practice might be completely steady and stable, and practicing in the way that we are all day long is really different. So I really appreciate your hanging in there and your still being here tonight and your dedication and resolve. I do believe that each one of us practicing, it matters. It matters for our own well-being. It matters truly for our loved ones and our families, and it matters in this world. So I speak on behalf of the world when I thank you for hanging in there. So last night I said that for this retreat we were going to once again work with the theme of the Brahmaviharas, the divine abodes, the four beautiful states of mind. And those of you who were with us last year might remember Carrie spoke about metta, and then I spoke about compassion, and then Carrie spoke about joy, and I spoke about equanimity. And so we're just mixing it up this time, and I'm going to talk about metta, and tomorrow night Carrie will talk about compassion. I'll talk about joy the next night, and then Carrie will talk about equanimity, and I'm not telling you anymore. That's it for now. Although I shouldn't even say that. I was going to say we do have a cake coming on Thursday. So I do want to go into this theme of metta, and I want to talk about it using the words boundless benevolence. Boundless benevolence. Boundless benevolence means boundless, means benevolence that is going in all directions, inwardly, outwardly, to our loved ones, to those that we have trouble with, to people we find ourselves indifferent to, to all beings in this world, this boundless benevolence is really, you could say, our North Star on the path. And we always have to begin and continue caring for our hearts because it's the closest to us. We know what our wounds are. We know what our struggles are, what our challenges are, what our vulnerabilities are, what can feel so unworthy and so limited within us. We know our griefs. We know our angers. And boundless benevolence means to become the one that embraces it all. So right now, as I'm speaking, can we actually practice it? Can we actually embrace whatever is happening right now, whether it's fatigue or irritability or sorrow, numbness, whatever it might be? Is it possible right now, because the practice, all of the instructions only have to do with now? Everything only has to do with now. So as I speak, can it be applied? Can there be this boundless benevolence, embracing all aspects of your being right now? Whatever feels unworthy, whatever feels less than, whatever feels embarrassing or shameful or painful or difficult, is it possible to, right now, offer an embrace, a real embrace? Thich Nhat Hanh speaks about that which is lovable is easy to love. That which is unlovable, that's where our love needs to go. And just to invoke some of his words in relationship to oneself, may I be peaceful, happy, and light in body and spirit. May I be safe and free from injury. May I be free from aversion, fear, and anxiety. And this is my favorite line. This is my favorite line. I have a lot of favorite lines, but this is my favorite line in this particular way of speaking. May I learn to look at myself with the eyes of understanding and love. That's looking at oneself with metta eyes, not with cold eyes, not with harsh eyes, not with judgmental eyes, not with eyes of assessment. Do you deserve to be loved? Not with eyes that are comparing. Do you deserve it more or less than anyone else? But eyes of loving kindness and understanding. The understanding is the wisdom, which I want to talk about a little bit tonight too. And the love is the love. May I see myself with eyes of understanding and love. May I learn. May I learn. This is a learning. It's not as if one is supposed to already have it down. It's a learning. May I learn to look at myself with the eyes of understanding and love. May I be able to recognize and touch the seeds of joy and happiness in myself. May I learn to identify and see the sources of aversion, craving, and delusion in myself. May I know how to nourish the seeds of joy in myself every day. May I be able to live fresh, open, and free. This is an embrace an embrace of the internal environment, and really to take this seriously, not with any kind of grimness or edge or anything like that, but as a real practice unto itself. As you become the one who embraces all, we are learning how to be love within the body, to actually be able to embody metta, to be able to embody love, because the body is now. The mind can be so many different places, all over the place, different parts of the world, different wanderings far and wide. The body is always here. And so to sense loving kindness within the body as an intention, not whatever we think it is, but as an intention to sense it within the body, it is now. Because the body is now. To become the one who embraces all, we do want to assume, and this may seem like a really big assumption, maybe an impossible assumption, but maybe possible as you contemplate it, to assume, to have confidence in the fact, the reality that love is one's true nature. That we are not trying to concoct, we are not attempting to create or make anything up, we are not trying to imagine anything, but to really get it, to really understand intrinsic love, love within. And I say assume, this is where we might want to have some confidence or trust in our ancestors, because every sage that is worth the name, worthy of the name sage, tell us that this is so, that love is already here. And our practice is to bring it forth and to access it and to allow it to thrive and to mature so that we do become the one who embraces all. We don't want to be dependent on love at some other point, if only or when or if. After this happens, or until this happens, I can't know love within. But right here and right now. So you're hearing me speak, and there are words, and you're listening, and, you know, because it's the first day of the retreat, sometimes listening through a veil of fatigue and restlessness and all sorts of kinds of things. But can you hear not just the words, can you hear your own heart beating right now? Can you hear your own heart quivering right now? And can you hear the space in the room that we are in, this room, in which there has been so much that has happened over all these years, so much sorrow, and so much love, so much delusion, and so much illumination, so much awakening, all of it in this very room that we are in. Certainly all these years of the women's retreat, so many tears and so many tears of joy. So much seeing things in a different way than before. So much transformation. We don't want to divide. We want to integrate wisdom and love. Not wisdom better, love less than. In the fall, as a benefit for the Cambridge Insight Meditation Center, Sharon and I decided to have a conversation together that some of you in this room were participating in. So we had a public talk for anybody who wanted to come. And we've known each other a long time. And so we talked about a variety of different things, spiritual friendship and sangha. And at a certain point, we started talking about metta. We started talking about love. And in the early years here, when I was sitting retreats, there would be a retreat in which there would be a lot of wisdom teachings. You know? And it was really great. It was really beautiful. I really felt at home. Tons of wisdom teachings for the entirety of the retreat. And then the last morning before we went home, there was a metta. And it would be a little bit kind of, you know, what? There was that kind of feeling about it. Like, why now? And what's the importance of this? And is metta actually part of the path or the path? You know, how does it all fit together? Because it didn't seem to fit together all that well. And then Sharon, at a certain point, went off to study metta in Asia. She spent quite a while there practicing metta, studying metta. And when she came back, you know, she'd already been teaching before she went off to do this. When she came back, she started teaching metta. And I forgot this, but she said that I was one of the few who actually wanted to learn about metta. And I do remember, I forgot that, but I do remember that there was a certain degree of pushback. There was a certain degree of resistance. And she realized, and she said this when we were conversing in this public conversation, she said that eventually she realized that, as she put it, people thought it was for girls. I thought it was a really good understanding, a really good insight, a really good realization. There was some of that that was happening. I do think that, I know, that in the years since, there is a greater maturity, definitely, and a greater understanding of the necessity for love, a greater understanding of the power of love. And there still may be echoes, which is why I am bringing this up. There still may be something lingering that may need to be looked at, where something has been internalized, where there has been this division. Wisdom is really where it's at. And metta, loving kindness, is a little bit less than. And we only open to love when we can't directly look at the difficult. You're nodding. Yeah. Carrie's been around for a while, too. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's a division. It's a false division. It doesn't make any sense. And it's not true. So it may be helpful. And I like that I'm talking about this right off the bat and the first day, the first night. It may be helpful to just reflect a little bit for yourself instead of just, no, you know, I know better. But just to see if there's any echo, anything lingering that has made you less than completely 100% confident in the power of loving kindness, in the necessity for boundless benevolence. Because we need to have confidence if we're to walk this path with surety, with steadiness. We need to have confidence and trust in what we're doing. You know, I know that in evangelical Christian some environments, there can be this real gender distinction where the feminine is seen as love and peace and patience and kindness and gentleness and self-control, and the male more bold and courageous and ruthless and the warrior spirit. We know that we have it all within us, that this is a false division. We know, all of us in this room, I hope, know that all of it is within all of us. Of course, relational damage when there are these kinds of echoes. So some of our understanding does have to do with healing whatever has been damaged in this way because of a lack of confidence in the power of love. This is from Makeda, Queen of Sheba. She says, "Wisdom is sweeter than honey, brings more joy than wine, illumines more than the sun, is more precious than jewels. She causes the ears to hear and the heart to comprehend. I love her like a mother, and she embraces me as her own child. I will follow her footprints, and she will not cast me away." Wisdom is sweeter than honey. Integration of wisdom and love right there. I feel that she's pointing to what could be called or experienced or known as the pleasure of wisdom. There can be great pleasure, wholesome pleasure, in exploring and learning and understanding things in a different way. Perhaps all of us know this at some time in our life or particular moments when we see something differently and there's a spark there and everything gets lit up. Sweeter than honey, yeah? The pleasure of wisdom. It's not cold and it's not barren. We think of love, we think of embracing as warm, and we think of wisdom or equanimity, another word for wisdom at times, is cool. But this is somewhat simplistic. It's not really so. A definition of equanimity, sometimes we think of equanimity as distancing. That's what it can sound like. And we can be afraid of it or veer away from it, or think that we're going to get indifferent. But another definition of equanimity, and this actually was brought to me by Tara Tolku, a lama whom I had a lot of contact with a good 40 years ago. And his definition of equanimity is making everything equally near. Yeah, that's the intimacy. And that's where the love is obviously totally intertwined. Not to be divided. how can we love the out-breath without loving the in-breath? How can we love the in-breath without loving the out-breath? Love is a welcoming. It is an allowing, a connecting. Love is kindness. It's emerging. It's an intimacy. Love is transcendent and limitless and unconditional. Kabir said, it's measureless. Kabir said, look what happens to the scale when love holds it. It stops working. It's without measure. Without love, without an embracing, there isn't discernment. There cannot be a real discernment. Because we're too busy pushing everything away. And oftentimes it's just unconscious pushing away because of the fear of actually engaging the power of love. So we push away and we don't even know it. There's a dryness and we're not even aware of it. There can be a wanting to get rid of, but not being able to let go. Wisdom means non-grasping. It means not clinging, not attempting to possess the unpossessable, which is everything. Not attempting to grasp the ungraspable, which is everything. Wisdom sees that all conditions, all phenomena change, are transient, are impermanent. Wisdom is learning to relate to experiences differently than we usually do. Instead of efforts to grasp or hold on to, we are learning how to relate with interest, with curiosity, with a measureless kindness and compassion, to neither grasp nor reject or avoid. With wisdom, our life isn't just a series of events and experiences. Good events or bad events, meditative experiences that come and go. It's wisdom to know that nothing needs to happen. I ask you to remember that during this time that we have together in your meditative explorations. Instead of striving for a particular experience, remembering nothing needs to happen. It's not so much about what happens. It has everything to do with our relationship to that which is occurring. Can we relate to what is happening here and now with wisdom and with love? Receiving and welcoming with love. Letting go of and releasing with wisdom. This applies to our experiences, our internal experiences, whatever they may be. And this is what we are exploring here, each one of us in our own way. But even though we're here and we're with whom we're with, and we're, I feel quite privileged to be with whom we're with, in this environment together, the luxury of being with Dharma friends, Dharma sisters. There are still people that are not here that are very much here. Isn't this true? Yeah. And so, we embrace whomever shows up as well. And we learn to love in such a way as to make the people in our lives feel free. And that is wisdom. That is wisdom. That is the sweetness of wisdom. This gift of encouraging and allowing those in our life to feel free. It can take, as we know, immense courage to let go, to love and to let go can require tremendous strength. Metta, embracing loving kindness, is not the effort to deny the realities in life. We don't want to do that. And we do that when there isn't enough confidence in love. We can't help but doing that. But do that when there isn't enough confidence in the path of love. We can't help but avoid and turn away from and deny. We are not interested in pretending. We're not trying to paper over anything with nice words. I don't think we're even really interested in niceness. You know, kindness is so completely different than being nice. There's a place for being nice, but, you know, it's not all that deep. Kindness is where the depth comes in. So it's not avoiding or denying, pretending. We don't want to convince ourselves of anything. The effort to try to convince is really tiring, is really fatiguing. And if we can have this assumption that loving kindness is already within us and just needs to be accessed, not made up or created, then it's a lot easier to not go about our understanding of love, of boundless benevolence, by trying to convince ourselves of anything at all. We learn so much about love and wisdom. We learn such deep lessons, the deepest lessons perhaps of our lives, of being alive in this life. One of the deepest understandings we can have is how to love as powerfully and deeply and wholeheartedly as can be, and to also let go and release and make free. And we oftentimes learn these lessons with those that we really love, with our dear ones, with people in our lives that we really care about, that we really love. St. John of the Cross said, "Tenderly I now touch all things, knowing one day we will part." Ah, you know, poignant, poignant. "Tenderly I now touch all things, knowing one day we will part." Poignant, and yet, we already know this. We know this even when it's really hard to acknowledge it, even when it's really hard to bear. How could we not know it? Of course we know. But remembering it and practicing it and living it can bring about a gratitude here and now for what is, for the beauty in our lives, for the relationships that we do have now, without guarantees. The sense of connection that is possible now, never knowing what will be, and knowing now. Can there be a fullness in this understanding? It's really throwing ourselves into the here and now with our whole heart. But when we do this, love springs alive. Wisdom is so much more available to us. And we are here in the only moment in which life is actually possible to be lived in. We are learning how to love without attachment, how to treasure without grasping. Those we love reveal our capacities for love. Those we love offer us the kind of access that sometimes we can't find for ourselves. So those that we love can offer us that access. And then connecting it with this gratitude for their presence in our lives now, for the gifts that they have brought us and the gifts that they are offering us right now. When we know love in this way, then it can naturally expand. We can want the best for our loved ones, just not exactly according to our ideas of what the best is. We can get very particular around what is best for someone else when it's really hard to say. It's really hard to say. I wanted to read you Watching My Friend Pretend Her Heart Isn't Breaking by Rosemary Wotola Drummer. On Earth, just a teaspoon of neutron star would weigh 6 billion tons. 6 billion tons is equivalent to the weight of every animal on Earth, including insects, times 3. 6 billion tons sounds impossible, until I consider how it is to swallow grief. Just a teaspoon, and one may as well have consumed a neutron star. How dense it is, how it carries inside it the memory of collapse. How difficult it is to move, then. How impossible to believe that anything could lift that weight. There are many reasons to treat each other with great tenderness. One is the sheer miracle that we are here together on a planet surrounded by dying stars. One is that we cannot see what anyone else has swallowed. Can we go about our life with each other, with our dear ones, with our loved ones, setting them free to be themselves, to be as they are, to let go of our efforts to control and to manage and to tweak? Can we respect, have a deeper, perhaps, respect for their lives as they are? We can see our attachments more easily with those we love. And attachment is not bad, whatever you might have heard. Attachment is not bad. Attachment is suffering. There's a huge difference between the two. Attachment is normal. Attachment is human. And it is limiting. And it is suffering. We aren't attempting to get rid of attachment. We are just attempting to learn how to soften the bonds, to deepen in the wisdom that we already have. In thinking about our loved ones, our dear ones, sometimes we do feel grief, we do feel sorrow, and this can predominate at times, especially, of course, in the midst of loss. How not? We need to normalize this completely. It's part of the practice. It's part of being human. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing bad about it. Grief flows in and grief flows out. Like everything else, it changes. It's transitory. It moves. It's shimmering like everything else is in this world. Allowing ourselves to fully grieve without resistance, there's a kind of pure grief that is possible where it's almost completely and absolutely beautiful. Perhaps some of you know what I mean. So I am going to end with a poem. By Rilke. Ah, not to be cut off, not through the slightest partition shut out from the laws of stars. The inner, what is it if not intensified sky? Hurled through with birds and deep with the winds of homecoming. This is the practice of boundless benevolence. And we sense where the separation lies, where are the blocks to boundless benevolence, where is our lack of confidence in the power of boundless benevolence. Can we trust it? Can we trust it? I'll leave you with that question for now. Let's sit for just a moment or two. May all beings have confidence in the path of love. May all beings have confidence in the necessity for wisdom. May all beings learn to love and let go, to welcome and to release. May it be so. Okay. Thank you for your kind attention. I want to make sure that everyone picked up a chanting sheet. And if you didn't, when you come in from the walking meditation, we will gather in the hall at 9:15. So that is a half an hour from now. And if you could take a chanting sheet for yourself on the table outside before you come in, because we'll begin with the chanting tonight. All right. Enjoy the walking.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.